It is the end of an era. Boston Celtics dominance goes away. Bill Russell goes away. The 60s go away, and we're talking about it here on this Friday, Locked On Celtics. We're not going away. Millie's, let's go. Rain and Jay's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This is the truth like 34. This is like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. John Corrales of MassLive.com here saying thank you, as always, for making this show part of a daily routine. I know this daily routine has changed. I know life has changed. And the fact that you're still finding a way to listen to this podcast, that is just really, honestly, I'm not kidding you, special. I really do appreciate it very, very much. I'm hoping that I provide for all of you a little slice of normalcy for however long you're listening to this podcast, a little departure from whatever. And so, as I said yesterday, this is a slice of normalcy for me too. Just me sitting here talking into a microphone is what I do on a regular basis, and I'm going to keep doing it. And as we continue to navigate this hiatus, we're going to continue with our historical deep dives. Today, we wrap up the 1960s, the greatest decade in Boston Celtics history, maybe the greatest decade in all of sports history for a single team. The Boston Celtics finish it off with two more championships. They lose a championship. They don't even get to the finals. The only time in this decade they don't go to the finals. It's one of two times in Bill Russell's career that he doesn't win a championship. In this episode, in this era, Bill Russell becomes the first black head coach in NBA history, and he leads the Celtics to maybe the most satisfying of their championships, his final year. And as you'll hear, it was a bit surprising that it was his final year. So as we continue our march through Celtics history, if you haven't listened to last week's podcast, if you're just joining us midstream, go back last week, the 50s, the birth of the Boston Celtics, Walter Brown, Red Auerbach, drafting Cousy, drafting Russell, drafting Tommy Heinsohn. This in the 60s, if you've missed it, you've got championships galore. The Lakers are repeat victims of the Boston Celtics. Wilt Chamberlain enters this mix. Sam Jones becomes a superstar. John Havlicek gets drafted. This is the first half of John Havlicek's era as he becomes eventually the leading scorer in Boston Celtics history. Half of that happens in the 60s. So, without further ado, here is the rest of my conversation with RedsArmy.com's Mike Dinan as we wrap up the 60s. So this last championship in a row, this is so. Red wins his final championship in 66. And now we get into the final years of Bill Russell. Bill Russell is now the player coach. First black head coach in NBA history. A player coach, which is rare, and technically it's not allowed anymore. So they got rid of that rule. I forget when. But like, Cowan's the last player coach?
He was. That was in the late 70s.
Yeah.
He was the last player coach, and he didn't really do a good job of it.
Yeah.
By then, it was becoming impractical to have a player coach.
Yeah. I mean, now we're talking about, like, we mentioned it before, no assistants back then. Nowadays, you've got Brad, you've got a front row of assistants of three people. Behind him, there's a second row, the back row of assistants, you know, video guys, all this other. There's like eight or nine people kind of all working on the game plan. You know, guys are out there 3 hours before a game with, you know, you've got five different coaches out there working with players. You got them on the sidelines with laptops going over game film. Back then, there was no game film. They weren't out there scouting. Like, Brett Auerbach wasn't scouting these guys. He's basically saying, yeah, we do what we do, and, you know, you try to beat us. Bill Russell takes over, 66-67, and that year, Wilt Chamberlain finally breaks through, finally beats the Celtics, finally gets his championship. But wasn't this the year? Was this the year that Russell got hurt?
No, I don't believe so. Okay.
That was earlier. That was earlier. I was thinking about something else.
Philly had a stacked team. You know, they had everything they needed that year to beat the Celtics.
So just to run down, they had Hal Greer, Wilt Chamberlain, Chet Walker. All averaging, Hal Greer averaged 29 points a game against the Celtics in that series. Philly beat the Celtics 4-1 in that year. I mean, that was just a decimation. Havlicek averaged 30 points in that series. Sam Jones only 21, and that was it. After that, Bill Russell had 23.5 rebounds in that series, but we couldn't really stop Wilt Chamberlain, who had 21.5 and 32 rebounds and 10 assists, averaged a triple-double in that series.
Yeah, that was a rough experience for Celtics fans, not having lost in forever. Philly won the first two games. Then it came down to a third game in Philadelphia, I think it was, that the Celtics had to have, and they didn't. They fell behind 3-0. I can remember watching game four on a Sunday afternoon, game of the week, you know, kind of thing, national telecast, and the Celtics had to win or be swept, and they were never swept in the Russell era. And they did hang on to win, but I remember that as a crazy game. There were fights, and but Philly prevailed in the fifth game. And that was at Philadelphia, and the score was 140-116. And I definitely remember that the fans in Philly, obviously they were going crazy, and they were chanting, "Boston is dead, Boston is dead." And the reports of their demise were premature. Next year was different.
Yes, it was. But at this point, Wilt wins, beats the Celtics, beats his former team, the Warriors, gets a ring. So Philly gets a ring in that series. And so this, by the way, is the only time that Bill Russell did not make it to the finals. This is the only time in Bill Russell's career he didn't make it to the finals.
Right. Also the only time he lost a playoff series to Wilt Chamberlain. 1-7, Wilt was.
That's amazing. That's just an amazing number. The fact that Wilt Chamberlain, like, we think about Wilt, and I mentioned before, Wilt should have, at the very least, they should have split. As good as he was, you feel like they should have had like those battles like Magic and Bird split, like that. That's what it should have been like. But Russell just kept on beating him, kept on beating him, kept on beating him. And they beat him again the next year. They beat the 76ers in the Eastern Division Finals. And once again, the Celtics get past Wilt Chamberlain and this one was, you know, Havlicek, Sam Jones steps up again. A lot different series there, Mike.
Yeah. Just real quick before we talk about that, I just want to say in 67, that was Casey Jones' last year. Everybody felt bad for him because he retired without a ring. He had won like eight in a row before that. But in any case, yeah, back to 1968, the Celtics were down one game to three to Philadelphia. And it did look like maybe they were dead. And then somehow they managed to pull that out. That series was disrupted, I should say, by a tragedy because Martin Luther King was assassinated right before that series started. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, the NBA decided, oh, let's play game one anyway. And it was not good, obviously. Terrible atmosphere. I don't imagine anybody really wanted to play. And the Celtics won that game, but then there was a delay in the series. And ended up, they were down 3-1, but they won game 5 in Philly. Then they won game 6 in Boston, and then game 7 in Philadelphia. And the Celtics were ahead in the last few seconds. Bill Russell made a free throw to give them the clincher. They won by 4 points. Wilt only took 2 shots in the second half. And I don't think that was ever really explained what happened there. He said, well, he was trying to get other people involved. But, you know, at this point in his career, Wilt was big on assists. In 67, the championship year, I think it was 67, that he led the league in assists. So he had changed his game. But Boston was not dead. They overcame that 3-1 lead, went to the finals again, and were against the Lakers. Let me just say that in 67, the Celtics won 60 games. Philadelphia, though, they won 68 games. That was what I said when I mentioned that Wilt had everything he needed to beat the Celtics that year. He had the best teammates he's ever had. But the Celts were 5-4 against Philly in the regular season. So they finished 8 games behind them, but they still won the season series. It was only in the playoffs that they couldn't pull it off.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
So the Celtics get to the 68 finals and get past the Lakers in 6. Bill Russell has his first title as a head coach. And the Lakers, this is their last year. They go out after this year and they get Wilt Chamberlain. Right? They get Chamberlain after this.
Yeah.
So the next season is Bill Russell's last season.
Well, we didn't know it at the time.
So what did you know at the time?
Sam Jones had announced his retirement prior to the season. Uh-huh. He said this was going to be his last year. So the focus was on him. We didn't know about Russell. I mean, if you thought about it, you might figure, yeah, he's getting near the end. But since he almost always won, you didn't look at it that way. He seemed to be invincible, and like maybe I don't think I ever thought about it. But if I had, I would have probably fooled myself and said, yeah, he's not going to retire anytime soon. You know, He announced the retirement after the season ended.
So
during the season, the Celtics weren't doing as well in the regular season as they usually did in 68-69. They were a fourth place team. They won 48 games. Not their usual.
No. That was a disappointing season for them. The best part, I think, about that season, that win over the Lakers might have been the most satisfying win over the Lakers, because the Celtics were not not expected to win, the Lakers at that point, they had Wilt. They added this monster to a monster team. The Lakers were prepared. The owner at that time was Jack Kent Cook. They're playing at the Forum, and this is the Lakers had taken a lead. They had a 2-0 lead. They had a 3-0 lead, and they went home. Game 7 of this series is in Los Angeles. They felt good about winning this game. In fact, so good that they put flyers around the Forum and said, the flyer said, when, not if, the Lakers win the title, balloons, and the balloons were inscribed with World Champion Lakers, will be released from the Raptors. The USC marching band will play Happy Days Are Here Again, and broadcaster Chick Hearn will interview Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, and Wilt Chamberlain in that order. Bill Russell finds out about this plan and says to his team, those fucking balloons are staying up there. And the Celtics win that game by 2, despite Bill Russell only scoring 6 points, but 21 rebounds and 6 assists, which was a team best in that game. And blame the coach in this one. He never took Bill Russell out of the game.
Bill Russell played every minute of that whole series, and as did John Havlicek.
That's, I mean, amazing.
It wouldn't happen now, of course, but as I mentioned earlier, that wasn't all that unusual back then. They had their horses and they rode them.
Right. So then Bill Russell retires after this year. The Celtics, this is it. The run is over.
Yeah. In that series, first of all, they got to the finals. That was a year where you thought maybe the Celtics aren't going to win this time. It was a legitimate, it was legit to have some doubts about them because, as we said, they were a fourth place team. Late in the season, Russell did get hurt. I was at the game. He went up for an alley-oop, and he got undercut, and he fell hard on the floor, and they had to wheel him out on a stretcher. I don't remember exactly how many games they had left at that point. I just remember it was in the second half of the season. So it wasn't that long before they ended up in the playoffs. But he was back for the playoffs, and they didn't have home court advantage in any series. They still won. They beat Philly in 5. They beat the Knicks, who were the up-and-coming team in the league. The Knicks won the championship the following season. So they were on the verge, and the Celtics beat them in 6. And then against the Lakers in 7, and the Lakers had a 3-2 lead. Game 4 of that series was the one I mentioned earlier where Sam Jones hit the shot with a few seconds left.
Right.
They were down by a point. They won by a point instead. I was at that game, and I ran on the court afterward.
No way.
Yeah. A lot of people did. You know, it was one of those storm the court things, but it wasn't like a wild scene like the end of a championship. It wasn't as wild as that. So, but I did run out there.
That's awesome.
I just wanted to mention that. One of my fan resume things, you know.
Sure. That's amazing.
But, then it got to game 7, the whole balloon thing that you described. And also there was a bizarre situation with Wilt Chamberlain and the Lakers coach, Butch Van Bredekolf. This was the yet another coach that Wilt played for in the array of coaches that he had. Wilt hurt his knee a little bit with a few minutes to play, and the Lakers were down. they were actually down 15 going into the fourth quarter, and they, you know, made a run. And Chamberlain was a little bit injured, so he wanted to go to the bench, which was unusual. But he went out, and the Lakers, without Wilt, started to make a run. And they came back. They got to within a couple of points with 2 minutes left. Wilt says, "I'm okay. You can put me back in." And the coach says, "No, we're going to go with what we have," because they were playing well. And that was very controversial at the end of that game, because the Celtics ended up winning by two. Lakers knocked the ball away when the Celts were up by 1 point in final 2 minutes. Lakers knocked the ball away from Havlicek. It went right to Don Nelson. He took a shot. It hit the back of the rim, went up in the air about 3 feet, and went straight down through. And that put the Celts up by three, which then was great because no three-point shot. And that was a killer for the momentum. L.A. just didn't have it after that, and the Celts hung on.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. I'm glad you mentioned Don Nelson, because there are some other guys in this run here that should be acknowledged. And Don Nelson's one of them. He had three championships with the Celtics in this decade. And, you know, he was a role player. His numbers, not like overly spectacular, but he had, what did he win? Five championships with the Celtics overall. We'll talk a little bit more about him in the 70s, but he came to Boston in that 65-66 season. He was a former Laker.
He got cut by the Lakers, and Red picked him up. And he proved to be a valuable player as a role player, like you said, for many years. And that was typical of Red. He had a lot of guys who were real contributors who came to the Celtics after either being dropped by their team or traded, given away, or guys at the end of their career or late in their career, where it didn't cost a lot, you know, maybe a third-round draft pick or something. Mm-hmm. There used to be 10 rounds in the draft. So you send in a late pick for somebody, and, you know, you could get a useful contributor. Some of the others that fit that category, Wayne Embry, he was a center with the Royals. He ended up being Bill Russell's backup for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm.
Bailey Howell.
Bailey Howell, yep, he got traded for. They traded Mel Counts, who was a draft pick of the Celtics, who hadn't done a whole hell of a lot. And Mel Counts got traded to Baltimore, the Baltimore Bullets, who are now the Washington Wizards. And Bailey Howell came, and he averaged 20 points a game for the first three seasons he was in Boston.
Yep.
He won two rings, I believe it was.
Two rings with the Celtics. Averaged 18 points a game in the playoffs in 68 and another 15 points a game in the playoffs in 69. So he came over and played his 3 years in Boston were the 3 years that Bill Russell was coaching, and he won two titles.
Yeah. And another one is Emmitt Bryant, who was a starting point guard, on that 69 team. He had played for the Knicks. He was like a backup, and the Knicks let him go, and the Celtics picked him up, and he was pretty important.
Yeah, he had in that finals against the Lakers, he averaged 11 points a game, five rebounds, and almost three assists. So, you know, coming in off the bench, you know, made a nice contribution.
20 points in game seven.
So, I mean, just another kind of, you know, it's the Celtics making all the right moves. And that's that's really, you know, Red Auerbach's just finding the right guys, taking chances. I mean, when we continue this conversation next week about the 70s, you know, it happens again with you know, finding Cowens and finding other guys in the 70s. And the big story in the 70s is going to be the drafting of Larry Bird the year before he was eligible, which, you know, but Red always found these guys that were useful and helped and pulled the, he made the right moves, you know, pushed the right buttons.
And Red did all that, pretty much without help. Again, you know, just like the coaching didn't have assistants. Well, Red didn't have much help in the front office either. And on top of that, after Walter Brown passed away in 1964, the Celtics had six ownership groups while Red was there. And so there was, you know, probably a lot of turmoil all the time and worrying about money, and but he managed to take care of business.
That's, you know, considering Red's history of leaving situations where conflicts came up, I think by this point he was just so entrenched with the Celtics that he wasn't going anywhere. He'd probably outlast the owners before they. What were they going to do? Were they going to get rid of Red?
Yeah, that's right. Although he did almost walk, he almost went to the Knicks. In I'm not going to remember the year, but it was somewhere around in the 80s or 90s. He got an offer to be the president of the Knicks, and he almost took it. But he was too strongly connected to the Celtics, and he couldn't do it.
Yeah, that, I mean, God, can you imagine? That would be like, I don't know, be like Hakeem Olajuwon playing for the Raptors or something. Like, I don't know. Anyway, so
that could never happen.
No.
If I can take one more minute about Red, hit you with a couple of facts about him.
Would love to.
Okay. He coached for 16 seasons in Boston, and also he had a few seasons elsewhere before that. He retired as the NBA's all-time leader in coaching wins with 938. He also won 99 playoff games and 9 titles. He won the Coach of the Year once. Once. But the award is named after him now. And he was with the Celtics for more than 50 years in his different roles. When he was coaching, one of his trademarks was the victory cigar. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. And he argued with the refs. You think Tommy gets on the refs? Red was tossed from so many games. He had $17,000 in fines during his career. Now you say, well, that's nothing. Everybody gets fined $25,000 now. Well, they used to fine them, you know, like $25 for getting thrown out. So he added up to $17,000 in very small increments. He had a lot of technical fouls.
Yeah.
And he got ejected as the coach of the All-Star game. All-Star game, great. And he punched the owner of the St. Louis Hawks, Ben Kerner, who was his former boss. He punched him on the court before a playoff game. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah, there was a dispute about the basket. One of the Celtics, they were warming up. It was in St. Louis, and they said, might have been Sam Jones, said, doesn't look like that basket is the right height. And so Red demanded that it get measured. And, of course, what do you mean it's not the right height? And it was beef. And next thing you know, Red punches Ben Kerner, the owner of the Hawks, on the court before the game.
That
Can
is
you just
amazing.
Imagine
that is
now?
Amazing.
And I'm sure he got fined, but that was it.
I mean, the things you used to be able to get away with back then. I mean, yeah, right. Can you imagine, like, going up to, I don't know,
yeah,
Rob Sarver?
What if Wick punched out James Dolan? The Knicks fans would be happy, but sure. You know,
can you imagine?
Nobody else would.
Can you imagine? Yeah, like Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge might do it.
Danny would get punched.
Oh, man. That's amazing. Really, Red was just confrontational. Just the, you know.
Yes. You can take the boy out of Brooklyn, but you can't take the Brooklyn out of the boy. And I can say that because I grew up in Brooklyn.
Sure, of course. I like the interaction he had with the then commissioner when he was smoking cigars on the bench, which is Maurice Podolov.
Yeah.
The commissioner says, you can't smoke cigars on the bench. He said, but there are guys smoking cigarettes on the bench. I said, what is this, an airplane? You can smoke cigarettes but not cigars? Which is a great quote, because that was the rule back in the 60s. You can smoke a cigarette on the plane, but not a cigar. Can you imagine flying on a plane? Everybody's lighting up their cigarettes, but like, oh, sir, sorry, cigar, no thanks.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
Yeah, it was not pleasant.
So
the garden used to have a cloud of smoke up in the rafters every game.
I can tell you, when I was playing in Greece, it was the same thing. And it was always, like, amazing to me. I can't imagine playing in an arena that big, like, with all of the smoke and everything, because the garden's obviously a massive arena. And I never played in anything like that. But, sitting, you know, they always used to say, like, hey, if you're out of the game, sit next to the coaches, because if somebody screws up, he's going to grab the person next to you and throw you back in the game. So this way you get back in and play. I do that, but both the coaches were smoking cigarettes on the bench. And I was like, screw this. I'd rather not play. I'm going to go sit at the other end of the bench and just sit there. Like, I'm not going to sit there and breathe in secondhand smoke. I was in the locker room with guys, like, cigarettes dangling from their lips as they were getting changed. Like, that was Tommy Heinsohn. That's Tommy Heinsohn's thing. Like, those guys would smoke in the locker. And that was just the thing. You just smoke in the locker room.
Hmm.
Ugh. Anyway.
So at the end, back to Bill Russell for a second. At the end, as I mentioned, he announces retirement in a Sports Illustrated article. He didn't do that until August after the 69 season. And so the Celts were a little bit hung out there, because then they hadn't drafted anybody that might take his place, and they didn't have a center, and they were about to fall on some hard times for a couple of years.
Yep.
But Russell went out. He played 29 playoff series in his career, and he won 27.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
And 5 MVP awards. It's just a shame that they didn't have the finals MVP or Defensive Player of the Year or anything back then. They didn't track block shots. I think his legend would be even greater if they had those things.
I mean, right. I mean, there was I remember seeing something about estimating blocks, how many blocks he would have. I forget what the number was. But he would have had, like, I want to say 3 or 4 per game, or 5 or something like that. Like, when they were okay, I just found it. They didn't count the blocks back then. There are some estimates that he blocked about 6 shots per game, and there are some people who would even say that it was closer to 8 or maybe even 10. And so without knowing, there's no way to tell, but can you imagine if he had 6 blocks per game to go with whatever average he is, whatever his averages are now? I mean, that's just insane.
Yeah. He would have been, it would have been even more legendary than he is. But it was too advanced for the early days of the NBA. They had to grow.
They played, what, 72 games back then?
For when they had fewer teams, yeah. It went up to 80 and then 81, depending on how many teams they had.
So the all-time record for the NBA blocks in a season is 456 by Mark Eaton. If he averaged, if just with the 72-game season, Bill Russell would have had 432, and obviously he played. There were more than that. He might have actually had the record. If not, then he would have probably had. If you look at the number, total blocks in a season, the record is Mark Eaton's 456, and then Manute Bol with 397. So probably you would have looked at this like the rebounding leaders, and you just would have seen, like, even if Russell didn't have the record, it would have been like Mark Eaton, Bill Russell, Bill Russell, Bill Russell, Bill Russell. You know, because if you go to the total rebounds, it's like the first seven are Wilt Chamberlain, then the next five are Russell, and like they alternate. Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain alternate basically for the first 18 spots. I'm looking at it right now, and for 21 of the 22 best rebounding seasons of all time, like that's what the block shots would have been.
Yeah, rebounding you could say is skewed a little because back then they took many more shots and mm-hmm. they missed many more. But the blocks, that's that's something that I think you could say doesn't matter. As to what season you were, when it was, you know, whether it was back then or now, if you could do that, that was something. I mean, Russell could win MVP award, as often as he did, and he wasn't doing it by his scoring. So,
right.
If they had Defensive Player of the Year, he would have won that every year.
Probably. They should probably name that after him too. Yeah. I mean, it was just different. It was just different back then. They didn't even count offensive rebounds. They just total rebounds.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the 1960s. Any final words on the 1960s?
Well, it couldn't have gone much better.
I would say not.
9 out of 10.
That's a hell of a decade for the Celtics. The best decade in sports history. I mean, maybe you got to go back. I'm not a baseball guy, so I mean, What did the Yankees win in the 20s? Didn't the Yankees have like?
The Yankees had, off the top of my head, I know they had one time where they won 5 years in a row. I think that was in the 50s. They certainly won a lot. They won more than the Celtics because they played more years. But for a period of condensed time, domination. One decade, 9 titles. Nobody ever did that. And you know, it was helped by the fact that there was no free agency back then. They were able to keep the team together. So you'll never see it again.
No, you won't. Like that's an important distinction. Like free agency didn't come around till the mid-70s and it didn't really, kick in until much later. No free agency. Although Red kind of made it so those guys they kind of wanted to stay. You didn't really hear a lot, and I mentioned this last week. You didn't hear a lot about guys wanting to be traded away. It's a pretty good situation, basketball wise. So the Celtics come in and win all but 2 championships in the 1960s. All but 1 championship
in
the
1960s.
I'm sorry. It was Bill Russell that won all but 2 championships in his career. But the Celtics win all but 1 championship in the 1960s. They lose in that 67 that 67 year to Wilt Chamberlain and the Sixers. It was Bill Russell's first year as a head coach. So we have this decade of dominance. The Celtics beat the Lakers in 62, 63, 65, 66, 68, and 69. The Lakers don't get a win over the Boston Celtics. What was it? Until
85
is the first time the Lakers beat the Celtics in the finals.
Yeah, it wasn't really a rivalry in the 60s.
No.
The Celtics, you know, beat them the first eight times they faced each other in the finals. They still have a 9-3 advantage. So when Magic and Kareem played against Bird, Parrish, McHale, that's when it became a rivalry because then both teams won.
Yes.
And both teams were competitive. With, you know, the Celtics just dominated the Lakers in the finals during the 60s. So, you know, technically it was not a rivalry.
Yeah. No, it was not. We have the emergence of Sam Jones as one of the most underrated superstars in NBA history. We have the retirements of many of these greats. Jones, Russell, Cousy, Casey Jones. We have the birth of Celtics pride. This is where all of the numbers were retired. There's so many numbers were retired in the 60s. It gives the team this aura, this greatness that goes along with the championships. We have this family, this feeling of belonging to something, with Red kind of retiring these numbers quickly to create this long-lasting Celtics history. And we have Bill Russell making history. We have that stretch in the 60s where Red is dealing with some of the most horrible off-the-court things. And that brings us now into the 1970s, which is where we'll pick it up next week. Tommy Heinsohn enters as... he retired in this era as well as a player. He's a Hall of Famer as a player. Now Tommy Heinsohn next week is the coach, and Tommy takes over the run and gun style. Havlicek becomes the dominant player for the Celtics. Cowens comes on the scene. JoJo White, and then at the end of the 70s, Cedric Maxwell and the drafting of Larry Bird. This is a wild decade. 70s are kind of a lost decade in the NBA. You know, drug issues, the waning popularity in the league, the ABA shows up as a challenger. That's going to be a wild decade for Celtics in NBA history. So be sure to tune in for that. I know Mike is very excited to talk about the 70s. This is really your heyday watching basketball.
70s, I became a fan in the 60s, and the 70s is when I really got fully immersed in it.
And now Bill Russell is gone. The Bill Russell era ends in Boston, and he kind of goes away, he goes into hiding. He ends up going into coaching. We could talk a little bit about that next week. Actually, funny, one of my college assistant coaches, Bruce Seals, played for Bill Russell. So I had a little bit of inside knowledge for a while about Bill Russell as a coach. And let me tell you, he was a tough coach. But Bill gets into coaching. That doesn't go particularly well for him just on the sidelines when he's not playing. But the 70s come along. Tommy Heinsohn becomes the head coach. He becomes a Hall of Fame head coach. The Celtics do win more championships, but there's a little bit of a transition that happens. We get into that. John Havlicek comes into his own and becomes a dominant force. You've got Dave Cowens. You've got JoJo White. You got so many guys in the 70s that really make such a big difference and win championships. And then at the end of the 70s, you've got Cedric Maxwell that comes into play. And you've got other guys like Tony Archibald that were big stars around the league that come into Boston and make a difference and help the Celtics win. And you get the drafting of Larry Bird. We're now close to the Larry Bird era. And another stroke of genius that gets Boston its next
big megastar. Red Auerbach pulls out another trick and gets himself Larry Bird. It's another kind of heist in a series of heists for Red Auerbach. So that's all coming up next week. Subscribe if you haven't subscribed. I hope that you've enjoyed these shows. If you're new to the show, again, last week was the 50s. This week is the 60s. Next week is the 70s. You're getting the full Boston Celtics education. You're getting everything from beginning to end. If you're a young fan, a new fan, this hopefully gives you a real sense of the very long, rich history of the Boston Celtics. Again, I really do thank you for subscribing and for downloading and for listening at a very difficult and odd time in all of our lives. So it's very, very much appreciated. If you can, share the podcast. Tell your friends that we're still going. It's free Monday through Friday, still going strong throughout all of this. It's the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.